Welcome to the Primal Potential Podcast. I am your host, Elizabeth Benton. If you want to create change in any area of your life, you're in the right place. Together, we'll explore the strategies and tools I've used to lose over 100 pounds, pay off $130,000 in debt, and become a multiple seven-figure business owner. I've supported thousands of women to levels of execution and fulfillment they didn't know were possible. So if you're frustrated, if you're doubting yourself, if you're not enjoying the journey, there's a better way. Together, we'll break through your past patterns, we'll eliminate the appeal of your excuses so you can get consistent, stay consistent, create the results you want, and most importantly, enjoy the journey. Let's get started. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Primal Potential Podcast. I am Elizabeth Benton. Thanks so much for joining me today. We have a guest on today. That is not how we typically operate around here. I have had a handful of guests on, and in fact, I've had this particular guest on. Susie Barber is on the show today, and if you've been around for a while, you might remember her as a big part of the Primal Potential team around when I was pregnant with Dagny, in the period after Dagny was born, and for a while after Dagny passed away, and she remains a friend. Our relationship is unique in that she was just such a critical part of my life during a season that stands out as one of the most pivotal seasons of my life. She came on board when I was pregnant with Dagny because I knew I was going to need support and structure as I stepped away to become a mom. And then not only was it a really challenging season for me, it was a super challenging season for her because not only did her experience really shift when Dagny died unexpectedly, but Dagny died the week that the pandemic caused all of the shutdowns, like when that first started. She died on March 20th of 2020. And so that had a huge impact on our business at Primal Potential. So we were both kind of out of our elements in a lot of ways. And you're walking beside somebody who's in the darkest period of their life is a challenging thing. And doing that in unprecedented times in the world, but also in business, it was tricky. And since then, Susie and I have remained friends, and we connect over our kids and work, and her husband is actually still part of the Primal Potential team. And one of the things that I love about Susie, and I actually reached out to see if she would be willing to talk about this and share a little bit about this on the podcast. One of the things I love about Susie is she is exceptional in showing up for people in hard times. And a lot of that is born from her own loss and experiences with struggle and just difficult seasons. One thing I have learned, one really huge thing that I have learned through my own loss and grief, not just with Dagny, but then, you know, we had a big scare with the twins when I was 21 weeks pregnant, and then I was hospitalized at 26 weeks pregnant. They were born at 27 weeks pregnant, and they, you know, were really touch and go for a while, and we spent 3 months in the hospital. I have learned to be so much better about how I show up for other people who are in a tough season. And it doesn't have to mean that it's a tough season in the most extreme way of death of a child or hard season with a child. It could be a layoff, a job loss. It could be a divorce or a breakup. It could be a challenging diagnosis, anything. And I have always... I was raised in a family where we show up for each other. So I don't think that this was ever something I was bad at per se. And I think we all know people who are just not great at being supportive or showing support. But I have gotten so much better from my own experiences, but also because of relationships with people like Susie and relationships with Susie. Now, we're going to talk about what we have learned about showing up for other people and ways to show up and things that we have found helpful and things that we have found unhelpful, not only in what people do, but in what people say or don't say. And obviously, that doesn't mean that we are establishing this is the right way and this is the wrong way, because everybody is different. So you might hear us talk about things that we don't like to hear said, but that doesn't mean that somebody else doesn't love that. So consider this a conversation about new ways to think about how to show up for other people, or even how to show up for yourself in a difficult season. But always, if you're in doubt about what to say or what to do or what not to say or what not to do, express that. For example, there's somebody in my life right now who is going through some infertility challenges. And one of the things that I ask her almost every time we exchange is, hey, I really want to be supportive. Are there things that you don't want me to ask about, or things that you don't want me to say, or are you okay with me asking about it? Would you rather I not ask about it and you just offer up when you, you know, feel like you want to share something? You tell me, because I certainly can operate from the standpoint of what I think would be helpful, but she's not me, right? So that is one of the things that I have learned, and it's so helpful to just ask, or to say, like, I don't know what you need, and I feel a little uncomfortable because I don't want to say the wrong thing and I don't want to do the wrong thing. Here's what I was thinking. Is that helpful? Is that not helpful? And I just always keep saying to people, if there's something specific that you don't want to hear or you do want to hear, tell me. The other thing, and Susie and I will talk about this, is I have learned through my own experience to shy away from saying, let me know if I can help, or, hey, I'm here to help if you need something, because that puts the burden on the other person to reach out to you with a specific ask, not knowing if that specific ask is anything along the lines of what you meant. And I started to share this example, and then I think I got distracted by something when in the conversation with Susie, but there's a family member of mine who had surgery recently. And because of my experiences, I resisted the natural inclination to be like, hey, let me know what you need. I'm here to help if you need anything. And instead, I said, here are four things I can do. Which would be the most helpful? Knowing full well that she might not respond, she might not select any of them, but oftentimes the people do, especially if you keep making the request. So in this situation, it was like, I can bring up a hot meal. I can take your kid to the playground for a couple of hours. I can give you a gift card to your favorite restaurant, or I can give you an Amazon gift card. Like, which of those would you rather? And obviously the options depend on your relationship with the person, your proximity to the person, your own resources of time and money. But I have learned that is so much more helpful than, hey, I'm here if you need anything. When I had the twins in the NICU for 3 months, there were a lot of people that said, hey, let me know if you need anything. And there wasn't one single time that I reached out and said, hey, you know how you said that you could help if I needed something? I need something and it's this. Could you? I didn't do that one single time. But there were other people who said, would you like this or would you like this? Or people who just provided support. And that was so much more valuable to me. Again, everybody is different. That's sort of the setup for this conversation. Susie is a friend. Susie is a brilliant businesswoman. She's a mom, a homeschooling mom, a working homeschooling mom. And I think you're going to really get a lot out of this very practical conversation about how we can do better showing up for other people. So thank you, Susie, for being willing to join us, and thanks to everybody for listening. I'd love to hear your feedback on this episode and what things that you have learned through your own experiences with people showing up for you or not showing up for you, and how you show up for other people. I just think that these conversations are so valuable because they're so practical, and we all have somebody in our lives who needs us, or we all go through periods where we need others. And the better that we can do collectively, man, I think that just makes a huge difference in relationships and in communities. So with no further ado, let's get into the conversation with Susie. Susie, welcome to the Primal Potential Podcast. I'm so pumped that you're back.
I know. It's been so long. I'm super excited to be here.
Yeah. And I mentioned this in the intro, and of course, you know this, but for the sake of folks who are listening to the show, maybe are newer to the show, you actually were part of the Primal Potential team and a really wonderful, valuable part, but also not in the most shining time in my life and not in the most shining time of Primal Potential. You came on board, I think I was pregnant with Dagny when you started, right? Because it was like at the beginning of the year. So we had like 3 months together before Dagny was born, I think, right?
Yep, exactly.
And then, so not only were you really just an integral part of Primal Potential and therefore of my life as I became a mom for the first time, but you were the one that I was texting as much as anybody else when, like, I remember even before we knew anything was like off with Dagny, I was like texting you about breastfeeding, and we were talking because we were kind of back and forth about work stuff a little bit. But I remember being like, I don't know if this is normal breastfeeding stuff, and I don't know if this is like a problem. And you were saying like, hey, here's a formula that I've tried. And I remember ordering it off of your recommendation, off of the link that you sent me, and it ended up showing up like the day after she died. But I just, like, there's so many conversations. I remember driving home from the hospital the day that Dagny died and like texting you what had happened because you needed to know. And then not only that, so she died on March 20th, 2020. That was also like a week before we were supposed to be going into a launch and the week the world shut down. So we're facing completely unprecedented times in business, and in the world, really. As I first stepped away for motherhood and then lost Dagny unexpectedly, and you were like in the mix in a really, really major way. And you not only were a part of that in my life, you were also coming to that from the perspective of your own infant loss and loss experiences. And that's kind of why I wanted to have this conversation with you today. And I want you to tell us about your experience and your son and your loss. But one of the things that I love and respect so much about you is the way that you show up for people when things are difficult, and specifically the things that you say and the things that you don't say. And I just remember being so sensitive after Dagny died that it felt like almost everything everybody said felt like the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But absolutely, there was something about the way that you communicated to me that you were very careful, but it didn't feel like you were walking on eggshells. And since then, I mean, heck, a lot has happened since then, but even, you know, when I went into the hospital with the twins and things weren't looking good, and your husband, Justin, still works with Primal Potential, so you kind of know, like, you've kind of been in the mix even after not being in the mix. And when things were like looking scary and you were reaching out, I felt that again, that when what so many people said felt wrong and off and not good to me, like, you have just been so consistent in coming across very authentically and in a caring way, but not an eggshell way. And we have had many conversations about this, not because we have the right way or we've learned through grief that there's like a right way to approach people who are struggling and a wrong way to approach people who are struggling, but rather we've noticed some trends and patterns and have some perspectives on, like, these are things that are generally helpful and these are things that are generally not helpful. But of course,
everybody's different. So it might just be that we have commonalities because of our shared experiences. But I'm always looking at, gosh, when something awful happens to somebody, there is this sense of like, I don't know what to say and I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
But through my own tragedy, I think I've gotten better at that. And I sense that the same is true for you. So I wanted to just have a conversation with you about our perspectives and our tools for supporting people in a way that is really, truly supportive. Because, you know, one of the things that people always say, like, hey, let me know if there's anything I can do. And I think that that is categorically one of the least helpful things that people can say. Sure. So,
yeah.
So much I want to dive into. But let's get started with just like your background in experiencing loss, because I believe that that's a big piece of your sensitivity and your empathy and the way that you show up for other people. So to whatever extent you're willing to share a little bit, I'd love to have you reflect on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, before we do that, first, I just want to say and just give a shout out to the fact that that season that we walked through together was certainly probably the hardest of your life, one of the hardest of your life. It was really hard for me too, for different reasons. But I look back on it and I'm so honored that I got to be in it with you and walk through it with you. And it was just so special. Even still to this day, I've looked back at those text messages and I remember getting almost like a play-by-play, like, hey, they're transferring us to a different hospital. And, yeah. You know, this is what the ambulance driver is saying and, you know, just all these things. Yeah. And I just was so grateful to walk through it with you. And also I just wanted to give a shout out to everybody who's listening, who's part of the Primal Potential community and your readers and your listeners and followers, because watching your community during that time and filtering all those emails and that were coming in and all the text messages that were coming from the people who listen was probably one of the most inspiring, powerful things I've ever witnessed in terms of loving, kind people. And so I just always look back at my days with Primal Potential just so fondly. And you have a really special community and really special people. I know you know that. But for those of you guys who are listening, I just have missed you guys. You're all amazing. And that was just an amazing time. And not just because of that time, like even just going through other times when we were launching or doing other stuff. You guys are just always so fun and so supportive of each other. And so I'm grateful to be here today. So my own personal story is that when I had my first son, my first baby, Kingston, I thought I was in labor. I was 9 months pregnant and thought I was in labor and was not feeling well and having pain and throwing up, but they didn't feel like contractions and was really sick. So I called my midwife at the time and she goes, it doesn't sound like labor. I think we should probably get you in and take a look. And we got to the hospital and they set us up on the monitor and proceeded to tell me at 9 months pregnant that he had no heartbeat. And so that day I had to go through a full labor and delivery and deliver my son who never breathed on earth. And that was probably the strongest grief I've ever felt in my life. And especially at the time, he would be 12 this year, which is I'm just crazy to think about. But especially at the time, I remember finding one book by an author named Angie Smith that had a similar story to mine. But other than that, there were not accounts and TikTok accounts and Instagram accounts and, you know, organizations that were really doing much or helping. And I didn't know anybody who had been through it. It was kind of more common, especially to not talk about it then. And so, yeah, I went home to a full nursery that was completely set up with baby clothes folded in drawers, just kind of what you dealt with Dagny too, and no baby, and felt fully like a mom, but had no children in my home and had to navigate that. And so in the years since, I have had three little girls, Mia, Mariana, and Rosie. And Rosie surprised us this last year. So you and I also got to walk the journey of both of us being almost 40 and pregnant and feeling hard, high risk pregnancies too, more recently. But yeah, one of them, Rosie, my youngest, was a complete surprise after 8 years of not having children. And so I have three healthy little girls here that I'm blessed to be able to raise on earth and have learned a lot about grief and how horrendous it is and crushing it is. And also all the beauty and strength and joy that can be found in that journey. And I think it was an incredible experience for both of us to walk through the loss of Dagny incredible, hard, horrendous. I honestly still wish we didn't have to do it, but the story was different. Yeah. But to walk through it, having been through what I had been through, I definitely think it gave me a special perspective to be able to support you. But also I felt really supported by you through all of that too. Like even still to this day, you'll text me about Kingston and he would have been 12 and we didn't even know each other when I lost him, but you now understand how to support me through that. So very special.
Thank you for telling us about Kingston and your story. And I find that I love to talk about Dagny, not just her death, but like becoming a mom and how excited I was. I think that that's one of the things that I have learned about people who are navigating something hard. There's a tendency to like tiptoe around it or not want to mention it or feel uncomfortable bringing it up. And of course, everybody is different, but that's something that I've learned to ask people. Do you want to talk about it? Do you want to talk about her? Do you want to talk about him? Do you want, and not just kids, right? People who lose a spouse. And I've heard people say like, one of the best things you can do is say their name, say their name. If somebody has lost somebody, because it can feel, whether this is true or not, it can feel like the world just moves on and kind of forgets because that person isn't here. And that's something that you've been really, really good about is, if you text me, whether it's because it's Mother's Day or it would be Dagny's birthday or something like that, you say her name. And that is so significant. But I would, from my perspective, what I have learned is I ask people if somebody has a miscarriage or they lose a partner or God forbid they lose a child, or even just they're going through something really hard. I want you to know that I would love to talk about this with you on any level. Like I want to know what you are experiencing and how you're feeling and what your story is. If you want to share it, like, please know that I'm here for that. Do you want, and keep asking, because you might catch somebody in a moment where they're like, it's too much. I know for me, it was just acutely painful for so long. And I felt completely overwhelmed at first. And I was unable to really talk about it, but never stop asking. What's your take on that in terms of when I was navigating my loss with Dagny or like other people in your life who maybe are going through something hard, the feeling that you don't want to say the wrong thing. How do you think about that now through the lens of your own experiences?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think the fear of not wanting to say the wrong thing is rooted in the right place. I think it's mm-hmm. important to validate that first, is that you're actually coming from a caring perspective when you're like, I don't want to say the wrong thing, which is wonderful. And so what I always tell people though, is I think that fear freezes people up. And I don't know about if this is true for you or not, but a lot of people I know who've experienced grief feel this. I remember more the people who were silent than I do the people who said the wrong thing.
Oh my gosh. 100%.
It is that silence is just debilitating when you have loved someone and have a relationship with them or even casually know them and you go through something so significant and they say nothing and pretend like it's not happening. That is actually one of the most hurtful things. So my biggest tip for people who want to support someone in grief is don't be so afraid of getting it wrong that you don't engage. You have to engage because the silence is unbelievably hurtful. Yeah. So being silent is the worst thing that you can do. And if you have been silent to someone who's going through grief before, just reach out and say that. Just say, hey, I just realized I heard this episode with Elizabeth and Susie and they mentioned this and I never realized that. And I'm so sorry. I didn't know what to say. And so I didn't say anything and that was wrong. Yeah. And even if it's been years, you can go back and make amends for that. But silence is unbelievably hurtful because it dismisses fully what they're going through and shows no support and no care. So don't let fear stop you from engaging. I'd rather you say the wrong thing than say nothing. So that's probably my biggest tip. And we could get into, there are certain things that are great for you not to say to people who are grieving. So we could talk about that. But I would say just make sure that you engage and show up is probably one of the most important things, and don't let fear hold you back. But in terms of wanting to talk about it, There are times when you're too fragile and you're too raw and you can't. And so I think asking if they want to talk is a great way to offer permission about, you know, get their permission to talk about it. But the people, especially who are close to me all these years later, my closest people are actually close to me because they talk about Kingston. And we call him King. That. And the closest people to me will say King. They say his nickname. And there's nothing I love more. Because I don't know if this feels true for you too, but he's never not with me. Yeah. I'm never not. That loss is a part of the fiber of who I am and my being. It never goes away. There's never not a minute when I'm making pancakes for the kids, when I'm in the house, when I'm, you know, frustrated, having a hard day, when I'm having a great day. There's never a moment where it's not with me. And so when you acknowledge it, you acknowledge like the whole of me. And and I sometimes feel like grief is so lonely and I'm hiding with that grief because other people get it as I'm walking through my normal days, what it's like to walk through something like that. And so, I definitely think for child lost parents, or widowed spouses, remembering them and saying their name is so important. I do think that's probably different for people who've been through divorce grief or job loss grief. Like there's different layers of that. So obviously be mindful of the situation. But I think particularly for child loss parents, there's no greater blessing than when you bring it up, but for sure ask for permission. But once you have that permission, especially like 12 years into this now, it's the most special part of my day and when actually other people recognize him and bring him up.
So. Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, one of the things speaking about permission and how it works in a different way is when somebody brings Dagny up to me, it also gives me permission to talk to them about it. Like, this is a safe person to have this conversation with. This is somebody that I can go to and I can have these conversations. Because as you said, it can feel very, very lonely. But I know, you know, it's a small group of people in my life who will bring up Dagny and who will ask how I'm doing and who will ask like, do you see her in the twins at all? Or like, you know, what has been the hardest part for you in this last year? When people say that, it tells me now I have a person in my corner that I can have these conversations with and I feel less alone. And that is such a valuable thing. Kind of shifting gears though to things that maybe we don't think are the most helpful, but could be very, very helpful to somebody else in a different situation or, you know, a different personality type. I've noticed that a lot of people are uncomfortable with somebody's pain and grief. And so because that makes them uncomfortable, they want to try to make it better. And like you said earlier, things that are rooted in really great intentions. It's not a bad thing or a wrong thing, but it doesn't usually feel great to a grieving person when you say like, it's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. Or, you know, in our situation with the loss of a child, you're going to have more kids or they're in heaven now, or like, you know, everything happens for a reason. And I believe that the intention is make somebody feel less pain. But my perspective on that is, your pain is valid and I am not here to diminish it. And I am not here to try and fix you or fix this situation, but I want you to feel comfortable enough to be angry, to be sad, to be devastated, to be wrecked, to be torn apart. And I remember when I was in the hospital, I think it was either right before or right after the twins were born, and you and I were texting and you were like, this isn't fair. Like, yeah. I'm so sorry, this isn't fair. And you weren't trying to say like, they're going to be okay. For some reason in the moment, because, you know, we were told that neither of the twins would survive. And this is, you know, a year and a half after Dagny died. And I'm like, wait, what? And so many people were like, they're going to be okay. They're going to be okay. And I'm like, were you saying that right before Dagny died? Cause she wasn't. Right. And that's just so it just triggered me. And I hate that word because I think it's so overused, but so many people were like, God's got them. They're going to be okay. Okay. Well, so did God not have Dagny? Like, cause did you not think she was going to be okay?
What was different about that? Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Like take it one step further and you would rewind what you said.
Right.
You
know, if you watched and it, I believe that they were just trying to make me feel better and give me hope.
Totally.
But I find that one of the most valuable things is, hey, You have every right to be scared. Hey, yeah. You have every right to be angry right now. And this is not fair. And that's not unsupportive, right? We don't have to fix people or make them feel better to be supportive. And you are just so good at that. Is that intentional for you? Like, are you processing that the way I process it, or is it something different?
No, 100%. It's intentional. Yeah. And it's because of what I walk through. I wasn't as great as it at it before that. Yeah. And so you don't have to walk through something like this to learn and hear from other people and to operate that way. But essentially, right. Especially once you've walked through grief, I think even if you've never lost a child or you've never been divorced or you've never lost a spouse, I don't have all those areas of grief, thankfully, in my life, but I can lean into my grief experience and translate that to what someone else is going through. And that's kind of where it comes from. But I'm a big fiction reader and I love like legends and tales and stories. And one of the things that I use that I think is a helpful example is when you've looked a wolf right in the eyes, like a wolf being death, you do not walk through the woods and pretend that wolves don't exist. Yeah. And so when I had 3 pregnancies following the loss of my son, everybody would always say, it's going to be okay. And I'd be like, you literally have no way to know that. You have absolutely no way to know that. And every pregnancy I had was high risk. Everyone, we had close calls. It was terrifying. And they could have died too. And that's why I'm saying it's unfair, because it feels like once you've survived something like that, you should just have an easy road, but that's not guaranteed. And right. So when people make comments like that, it's not helpful. And I said, you never, when you have looked it in the eyes, walk through the woods and pretend that wolves don't exist. But it doesn't mean you don't walk through the woods.
Right.
Like the walk, the journey through the wilderness is worth it. And it's taking every ounce of bravery I have. And for you to kind of like layer that and paint that over with like rainbows and flowers to try to make right. me feel better is completely unhelpful, because I know it's not true. I feel it in every cell of my body as I'm walking that journey, that this could happen again, that it has happened before, and I'm not sure if I can survive it again, and I'm still going to do it because it's worth it. And so having people who acknowledge how hard the journey is, and just offer full space for the grief is really important. I remember, and you've done this with me many times too, where you've made space for the fact that it's normal. I was meeting with a doctor just a week or two after Kingston had passed, and she said, how are you doing emotionally? Like, are you sad? Are you grieving? Do you need support? Are you depressed? She was asking if I need medication. And I said, yes, but I think that's a very appropriate response.
Yeah.
Would you not be worried about me if I wasn't depressed? Like, my son just died 2 weeks ago, yeah. You know? And so I think one of the things when we try to make it okay, we try to make it better, is we're actually forcing somebody into a feeling that's not natural. When you're grieving, like, there needs to be space for anger and frustration and for all those things. And yeah, that it's going to be okay is like, when you don't know that, don't say it. And really just walk it one more step down the field. Like, one of the things, Elizabeth, for me, that people would always say too, that I encourage people to be careful about, is if you're a person of faith, be especially careful what you say about God to people who are grieving.
Yeah.
Because people will say things like what you were saying, like, oh, they'll be in heaven now, or God needed another angel, was something that people would say to me regularly.
Yeah.
And I was like, can you imagine, just walk again, take one more step, put yourself in my shoes and take one more step of what's going on in my relationship spiritually with God, if I think that the God of the universe needed to take my child from me,
right,
and I'm supposed to just be okay with that. Right. You know, like, that's a really big, big thing that I had to wrestle with God. And I know it's still part of the spiritual journey if you're a believer. But just remember, be careful what you say about God to people, you know, when they're grieving, and especially because you're trying to say it in a way that makes it okay, but it can literally damage people's relationships spiritually, with their whatever, you know, religion they follow. If you're saying that from a place of you're trying to make it better.
And like you said, if you don't know, if you don't know, like, you don't know that it's going to be okay, you also don't need to know that this child died because God needed an angel. Like, you can think that, and you can think that's helpful, but you don't know it.
Right.
So don't say it.
Yeah.
Like, you can say, I don't know why God would allow something like this, or I don't know what God's role is in this, which is very different than like, God needed an angel. I heard that so many times, and I was like, that's so not helpful. and fostered a lot of anger in me. Like, oh, really? Did he write you a letter? Did he let you know? Like,
you know, yeah. Yeah. And then you're trying to lean on God as a believer for support. And you're like, and then you're trying to wrestle with that, you know, like, oh, he needed from me when I'm this fragile person right now, you know, like it makes it seem like he took from you. It's a really awful approach. And so I will say, and I want to interject, because if you've said that, you're probably feeling a lot of shame right now.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
And what I want to say again is I had multiple people who said things like that to me. And I don't actually remember who they were and when they said it, because I don't have time in my life as I'm healing and growing and learning to hold on to those things.
Yep.
And so, but I do remember the people who didn't say anything. So I just want to remind everybody again that making mistakes is better than ignoring. And so show up and do the best that you can. But yeah, if you're looking for ways to show up better, maybe don't say those things again. And fully, it's okay to apologize and say, gosh, I didn't know how that'd make you feel. And I'm so sorry that I said something that made you feel this way. But in the future, just remember, be careful what you say about God, and be really careful, even though your intentions are good, about trying to smooth things over or make it better. Because it can kind of feel like you're just honestly trying to move on in the conversation and get it back to
like, because you're uncomfortable.
But, yeah. And what you're just saying to me in that moment is, I need to fake positivity for you because you're uncomfortable. But I'm not in a place where anything about my world internally feels positive, and it shouldn't. That's a healthy response to what we're walking through. And it can still, like around Kingston's birthday, around, you know, special holidays and things like that, it still feels that raw and that not positive. And I make space for that even 12 years later, you know, like Christmas morning, Mother's Day, like those things are different for me and will always be different for me.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And so I think the people who support me the best are the people who just say that's valid and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that I notice very frequently is in an attempt to be relatable, making it about yourself, making somebody else's struggle, whether it's like, I'm divorced too, or, you know, I lost a child too, or, you know, any number of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something I really stay far away. I didn't, like you said earlier, I didn't always know that, but I have learned that from my experiences. The number of people, like even when the twins were in critical condition, and we waited a while to tell anybody about that really, but people would say, I had premature twins and, you know, they're fine and your girls are going to be fine. And it's like, this is not the time. And often this is not the relationship, but more so, this is not the time for you, coming from a good place of being like, you're not alone, to make it about you. It's just not.
Really? Yeah. 100%. And you have to remember, just even if that is your story and that's true for you, there are just as many people out there, or a good number of people, maybe not just as many, who that story ended differently.
Sure. Yeah. Right.
And be like, oh, I went through the same thing and my twins did not survive. Like you meet so many lost moms once you enter that space and that journey, and lost parents. And so, yeah, you have to just remember that it's not 100% true, and don't say it if it's not true. That one is a tough one for me too. And I even still struggle with this because of what I've been through, I know I can help and I know I can add value. Right. And so what I will say sometimes is, when you're ready, if you ever want to
exactly
talk about this, I've lost a baby too. And I'm happy to share, you know, to answer questions or to share anything with you. Because I do remember feeling so lonely when Kingston died. And then the first book I found where someone was sharing a story of that, I literally slept with the book. And I think I read it 3 times in 1 week, because it was like, I had nobody who was also a mom who understood. And I remember Angie Smith was sharing in her book about how she woke up after her baby died in a panic about the clothes that the baby did or did not have with them when they were at the funeral home. And I had that exact same experience. And I literally was like, oh my God, like it's not just me, you know? And so there's things like that, that once you walk this journey, you start to realize actually do happen to a lot of people, and it makes you feel less crazy, more normal. Like you're going through the process that you should be going through, and that your feelings are okay, and you're gonna make it through. So there is hope in finding people who have walked a similar road, but there has to be trust. There has to be a relationship. The person has to be ready. And so there's many people who have shared their story with me who have no idea that I've actually also lost a baby, because they never invited me into the conversation in that way, and I didn't force it. And so I think it's important to ask permission, because then there are times where it could be helpful to share your experience. But if that's your first, you know, couple things that you say to someone, it does feel very dismissive, and your story is not their story.
Right. Yeah. When people say, "I know how you feel, I've been where you are," I'm like, no, I don't care if I'm talking about my trip to the grocery store this morning. You haven't been where I've been, and you don't know how I feel. And I understand intellectually the attempt at relatability, but as I see it, there's just better ways to express that. And you hit the nail on the head when you said there has to be trust and there has to be a relationship. Yes. And so, especially in the online world, like a two-way relationship and trust, which of course goes both ways with people that I'm in relationship with. So maybe that's like, you know, I've been divorced. My first marriage ended in divorce. And I've also had premature twins. I've had a long NICU journey. Like, I have a lot of things that, like, for close people in my life, I could say like, "Hey, me too." Not only if there's a relationship, do they have a higher chance of kind of knowing your history? Like, somebody I'm close to certainly knows those things about me. But one thing that I recall from the most intense moments of my grief is, even if I wanted to connect with you in that way, it can feel too intimate and too close and like too acutely painful. So for people with whom I have a relationship and we have an established trust, sometimes I'll write them a letter, and on the outside of it, I'll say, "If you're open to a few things that helped me in my situation, which I acknowledge is nothing like yours," because no matter how similar you could like paint the picture, it's nothing like your loss of Kingston is nothing like my loss of Dagny and vice versa. Like, your pregnancy is nothing like my pregnancies, and they could have a million things in common, but they're still nothing alike. And so when people are close to me and I know that like, maybe this is just really too sharp to have the intimacy of a conversation and the expectation that I'm going to be able to respond, you know, I might be unable to respond, but I'll write a letter and on the outside make it really clear, like, what, you know, what this is about and what this is for. And then if they're just having a moment and they want that, and that can open that door, but they can do it kind of on their own time in their own way. But the great thing about that is it reminds me we have to be in relationship. So if I've just met somebody in a professional setting, we don't have the kind of relationship for me to be like, "Hey, me too. You want to hear about my..." And I also think you have to give people some breathing room. Generally speaking, right when something has happened or in that immediate window, you know, first month or whatever, almost certainly not the time for a me too.
100%. Yeah, it is definitely there is a rawness to it. That's when the trauma has occurred. It is so raw. So I think you have to actually be the most careful, again, engage and don't be silent, but you have to be the most careful to just make space for their feelings, support them, offer to help, offer to pray, but don't say too much about God, you know, things like that. In those beginning times, it goes longer than I think most people think. It's not just a week or two. It's not even just a month or two. Like, I would say probably the first 6 months, at least, from the moment of a trauma. And then after that, I think the offer can really help. I love that idea. I've never done that myself or received something like that myself, but that letter piece could be a game changer. And so I think that's a wonderful, practical way to show up and to get permission to ensure you're still in relationship, and to really help people and share your story, but in a way that they are ready to receive it and actually find value from it and don't feel like you're kind of making it about you or dismissing it.
Or that they need to respond. Or respond appropriately, like, because that can just feel really hard.
Right, because if you're telling me about a super big trauma that you've been through, then I feel the need to say, "I'm so sorry for your loss." Right. I'm literally crumbling under the pressure of it just happening to me. Yeah.
You know, one of the things, and I want to be a good steward of your time here, but one of the things I wanted to touch on, I remember, at least I think I remember, when you had Rosie around that time, you posted something online and it was somebody in your life basically saying like, hey, I think it was right before you had her, what would be the most helpful, A, B, or C? And they gave, do you remember that? They gave you like multiple choice options and it was like,
yes,
drop off food, like take the kids. I remember
exactly who it was too. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, yeah. I have adopted that and I use that all the time. My mm-hmm. cousin had surgery and when I say like, hey, how can I help? You're usually met with like either no response or nothing. And so many people did that when the twins were born, not so much after Dagny died because freaking apocalypse and we didn't hear from anybody, not anybody, but a lot of people. But like when the twins were born and I'm recovering from a C-section and I have a 1-year-old and I have 2 children in critical condition and people would be like, let me know if I can help. That is so much less helpful because that puts it all on me. And then I have to feel comfortable asking you for something and I probably don't. And then I also have to make time for it. But if I were to say, you know, hey, what would be the most helpful? I can take Roman to a park for an hour on this afternoon or that afternoon, or I can get you a gift card to Whole Foods, or I can drop a crock pot off on your doorstep with XYZ meal. Which would you rather? That is a 10 out of 10 in terms of helpfulness, in my opinion.
Absolutely it is. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. And this is actually something that I'm even thinking. So if you've showed up differently or ways that you wish you would have shown up better or, and more intentionally, it's okay. Again, cause I, even with myself, even what I've been through, I know that there's times, gosh, even in recent years where I'm moving quickly and I'll just say, if there's anything that you need, let me know, or how can I help, you know, and I'll leave it being open-ended because I'm just moving quickly through the busyness of my life, raising kids and work. But what I've tried to do now is to stop. And I never tell people I'm going to pray unless I'm going to stop and pray right then, even if it's quickly, so that it doesn't just become like this weird, meaningless
something you say.
Yep. And when I ask people if they need anything, I usually offer, like, can I donate to someplace for you? Can I send a meal? Do you need financial support? Would a gift card be helpful? Like, I remember when the twins were in the hospital, I was like, Elizabeth, please let me set up like a GoFundMe for you guys. Because people may not know this about your journey, but you guys were literally spending so much to be close to them in Boston. Mm-hmm. And with Roman, you had an apartment, you were walking miles a day while you were recovering from a C-section. And so I literally wanted to give like practical like ways. Like I was like, everybody would love to donate. And you guys decided not to do that in that moment, which is totally fine. And you're right. But I tried to give a practical example. Like, can I send you takeout? Can we do this? And you've done that for me too. And so I think that's a really great thing, is to never leave it open-ended, because when people are going through something, they don't know what they need a lot of times. And
absolutely.
So actually I would say most of the time. So having a few choices is a game changer, because it's very easy to say, actually, this would be helpful. And even if the things that you list are not helpful, it may prompt them to know what they do need. Yeah. So for example, I have some friends who their son just had a really traumatic medical diagnosis and they're having to move back. They were overseas. They're having to move back to the States unexpectedly. They have a newborn in addition to the son who was struggling. And so I was writing them and I said, can we send food? Can we help you get a car? Can we pick you up from the airport? Practical things. And they said, actually, we're really good on all of those practical things, but your text made me realize we need people to check on us every day. We feel very lonely. So could you reach out every day for the rest of the week? And we were like, absolutely, we're happy to do that. So if you're going through grief too, don't be afraid to ask for some of the things that you need like that with your people, because most people are happy to help. So that's a good tip too, if you're ever finding yourself in a situation, to ask for it. But yeah, I think giving options is great.
Yeah. And it's a lot of times people aren't in close enough proximity to bring over a meal, but texting somebody and saying, I can give you a gas card or a Whole Foods gift card, or I can have dinner delivered from your favorite restaurant, right? Like all of those things. Or even if you can't spend money, like I can text you daily and just see if your answer has changed, or see if there's something different that you need, or, you know, what is it that you, if you were in their shoes, what would you wish that somebody did, you know? And like, for us, like you said, I mean, we were spending so much just an obscene amount of money, not even considering medical bills that just came in like 2 weeks ago, not even. But the thoughtfulness that somebody is not only wanting to help, but taking the initiative to offer specific things. Like, we would for sure have said, you know what, dinner this night, this week would be amazing. But if somebody said, let us know how we can help, I wouldn't have been like, oh, you can get us dinner this week. Like, it's just such a different, it's such a different experience.
It's so true, especially you don't know what their financial situation is. You don't want to sound like you're imposing, but yeah, but you could totally need that help. So yeah, for sure. And I would also say asking is so important too, Elizabeth, because I had times where we had so much food and so many flowers delivered, and I was so grateful for what everyone was doing, but I was like, my house smells like a funeral home. And several people who had no business making food were trying to make food. And literally, like, one night we ate something that everybody got sick, and it was horrible. So sometimes you can, in an attempt to overhelp without permission, again, without asking, it can actually cause more of a burden for people.
That's a great point.
So I think, again, give options, offer, show up, respect what they say, you know, don't try to like, I need to bring them this kind of gift, or I need to bring them this kind of dinner or things like that to meet, like, make your own self feel better. It really, really just truly show up genuinely with, like, how can you help, and give a couple of examples of what you can do so that they know that they can ask for it, but also just be mindful too of just kind of forcing in. I don't actually think flowers are usually a bad thing, but, like, my sister had posted for us, like, please donate in lieu of flowers, and we still just were overwhelmed with, like, basically funeral arrangement kind of flowers in our home for weeks on end. And that was just to walk out, and to some flowers are something I absolutely love. I know you do too, and, like, you pick them from your beautiful farm and all that, but I would walk out and I would just be so sad, like, that there were white lilies all over my house. And just the smell of lilies still to this day is something that's really interesting for me, and a memory, it holds a memory that's not necessarily a good one. And so, and we really needed financial support during that time. We really wanted to start a charity in his honor. And so there were things that I wish people would have asked, given examples, and then made space for what we uniquely needed in our situation.
To wrap up, if you're reflecting not just on your experience with Kingston, but any of your challenges through pregnancy or having a baby, like, is there anything that stands out as, this was one of the most helpful things, or this is something that I learned and now do because it made such a difference for me? I just want to leave people with some practical ideas, because, like you said earlier, it doesn't matter if we're talking about a layoff or a divorce or a diagnosis or a death, like, we all have to show up for other people. And so learning ways to do it that are more helpful, I think, is everybody needs more ideas.
Yeah, I think ideas are for sure great. I think probably the moments that mean the most to me came from the people that were closest to me. And I think that's probably something to remember, is that there are things that people who are more distant in relationship, maybe they know you through work, they know you through church, you know, they know you from online, can do to help and support, donate, send meals, send flowers, things like that, send appropriate messages. But, like, my sister on Kingston's first birthday wrote a fictional story about him that we at some point hope to have published as, like, a children's book. Mm-hmm. And it is the most precious possession, one of the most precious possessions I own. I keep it, you know, with Kingston's things. And we once had a fire scare at our house, and I know what I would run back in for in a fire, and it has nothing to do with money. And, you know, like, once I had my kids and my animals out, I came back in for his things and the things that people have given me that matter, that are related to him. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you have the proximity to someone, like, if it's a best friend, if it's a child, if it's a parent, if it's your spouse, showing up in just really meaningful, intentional ways with pieces of jewelry or stuffed animals or donations to charities or practical support, some of those things, especially, like, years later, like, my mom got me a necklace for Mother's Day that has Kingston's name on it with my girls' names just this year, and it is so precious to me. And so I think those things need to come from people who have close proximity and close relationship, because they know you and they're your people, you know? And so if you have that, those are probably the most meaningful things. And so if anybody who's super close to you goes through something, you are the people they need, the person that they need to show up with those things. And so you can Google, you can find a lot of ideas. You can ask other people who have been through grief what was meaningful to them. And I think showing up in those special ways that are not the same way that everybody is showing up is really intimate. And those are probably the ideas that I would stick with. Like, I have similar things. Like, Justin actually sent me roses when everyone else was sending lilies, and wrote a letter from Kingston to me in the first couple weeks. Like, "Mommy, I wish I was there with you," is what he wrote on the card. And I have that card that he wrote. And so if you're close, I know we're both like kind of tearful about it, but it's so special. And so if you're close, show up in special ways. And if you're not super close, just all the things that we've talked about, you know, asking permission, giving examples. And most importantly, that's my biggest tip, is just to show up and not to be silent ever. Don't let the fear hold you back. And we live in a day and age right now where you can Google, you can follow a couple of Instagram accounts, you know, or TikTok accounts, and you can get a lot of great ideas. Yeah. And so we can be more intentional more easily than we've ever been able to be, and get tips from people who have walked this journey. And so I would just encourage you to do that too, is to take a beat and look for ways to show up that matter and that are not going to be harmful. And just thank you for wanting to show up for people, for listening to this episode and wanting to support, because even when we get it wrong, it's all coming from this wonderful place, and we're all showing up for each other as humans and in a community. And that is special and is worth celebrating.
Yeah. You know, when we lost Dagny, it was at a time where most people did not feel comfortable being physically present. Because the pandemic had just like happened and people didn't really know what was going on. And there was a lot of fear, at least in our families. I mean, Chris's parents were out of the country and couldn't get back. And, you know, a lot of my family that I would have very much expected to be around was not, because of those circumstances. There weren't even any florists open at that time, because everything was on a mandatory lockdown. And so what I remember from that time is the people who were physically present and who did find a way to be in physical presence with us. Like, there's just something really powerful, of course, when you're in a relationship with somebody, to like, "I'm here." Even if I remember somebody just showed up at the house and left something on the steps, and that they cared to put forth that effort.
Yeah.
I will not forget. And then you mentioned, you know, the things that have Kingston's name. Somebody just very recently sent me blankets for the twins. And they are on each corner. They have one of my kiddos' names. They have Dagny and Roman and Piper and Charlie. And that is the acknowledgement piece of it so, so significant. And then the last thing that really stands out to me, and you're a great example of this, are the people who acknowledge that it is really hard and do not try to make it okay or better, or try to convince you that like, you're going to get through this, you're going to be okay, it's going to be okay, they're going to be okay, like everything happens for a reason. Just the sense of like, this is awful and I'm so sorry and I'm here. Like, that is so simple. Whenever you feel like you don't know what to say or you don't know what to do, if something is awful, say that it is awful.
Yes.
Resist the urge to make it better for somebody, and to let them know that you hurt too for them. And like, my heart is breaking for you in this, and it is not right and it is not fair. And I am so sorry. And I am here. And that is simple and it is free. But I will never forget where I was in my hospital bed when you were texting me about the twins and just saying like, "This is just awful."
Yeah.
And it's very simple, but it is a world apart in terms of support for somebody than being like, "You're going to get through this, brave girl."
You know? Yeah. Am I? Because right now I feel like I am, and that's not helping.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so terrible. Yeah. And I I literally can remember those exact moments too. Like I feel the peace and the calm in my body of just not being alone. Like I remember having friends who came over and their physical presence, I can't imagine walking through what you did with people not being able to be there and coming over and sitting on the couch next to me and literally just holding my hand and just, you know, talking and letting me talk and hearing about Kingston and about his story. Like I really wanted to share the day, the birth story, the process of how it happened, because I had no place to say any of that. And the people who just made so much space and didn't make me feel shame or any kind of judgment, still all these years later, are some of the things I'm most grateful for in my life.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Susie, for having this conversation. And guys who are listening, I hope that this was just an opportunity to think about supporting other people and supporting yourself in other ways. So I appreciate your time, and I know it takes you away from your beautiful kiddos. So thanks so much for being willing to share with us.
Oh, absolutely. It's good to be here. I have missed everyone. I hope all of you guys are doing well. And I'm so grateful for the conversation and so grateful for you, Elizabeth, for making space for conversations like this, because a lot of people don't talk about this and a lot of people have such a heart to know and want to show up. And so thanks for inviting me in.